This is A Lost Plot, the podcast where we explore meaning in movies together.
Hello, universe. Welcome back. It is your boy, Mav, back with another episode of, as always, A Lost Plot. I am your host, you all know. And today we have our wonderful guest back with us today. Well, I guess he's a co-host. I don't know why I called him a guest. It's Avalon. Avalon, thanks for being back.
Hello, hola, konnichiwa, and leho.
Now, today we are
You could keep calling me a guest. I don't mind.
A guest, a host. You know, he's on so much we don't know. We blur the lines. what we do know is what we're reviewing today, which is Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. It is the recent 2024 American supernatural comedy film, which was written by Gil Keenan and Jason Reitman and directed by Gil Keenan. And it stars Paul Rudd as Gary Gruberson, Carrie Coon as Callie Spengler, McKenna Grace as Phoebe Spengler, Finn Wolfhard as Trevor Spengler, and a whole host of other people that you all know and love from the previous movies. We're not going to go into all of them, but what we will go into is what it is about. Avalon, you want to give us the rundown?
So Ghostbusters Frozen Empire is a follow-up to Ghostbusters Afterlife, which we have not reviewed yet, but essentially, which is a continuation of the original Ghostbusters movie, which we saw, which we have reviewed. So it's like present day. The Ghostbusters team has changed a bit. Ernie from the original Ghostbusters team is now like a rich guy, and he now funds the Ghostbusters. And so like there's this new, like, the family of, what's his name, Spengler, the
Egon Spengler.
Yeah, Egon Spengler. Yeah. Yes. Like, his daughter and her family are now the team that comprise the Ghostbusters, and they so like they're just going around hunting ghosts in Manhattan now. So like that's become their job in a way. Though, yeah. I guess and in the course of things, they come across this ancient like artifact with runes on it, and it's like clearly it's got some ghostly presence about it. It's getting a lot of readings that are off the charts. And they start investigating what this thing is, and then they begin to realize it's like an ancient god or something trapped inside, and then it's trying to get out, and it's, yeah.
Yep, yeah, and it moves on from there, but that pretty much is what you got. So, based on the 9-point rating system that we use to analyze what we think of movies, if you want to check that out, check out our website. We're not going to do too many plugs here though, but anyways, the 9-point rating system, what did you give this one?
My score is a 3.85, but that's based on the rating system. I would say this falls a little bit more in line with the original Ghostbusters as far as tone, and like this is more of a comedy than an actual like full-on story, though there is more, probably a better story than the original Ghostbusters, but that's not saying much. So
I would agree with that. The question is, does this spread across the gamut of both comedy and, you know, ghost genre, whatever, horror, thriller, whatever you want to, like, does it stray enough into the action world that we can take a bite at it, or is it still too far gone? We'll have to see. I gave mine a 4.35, so I'm actually surprised I got a higher rating than your other boy did, but we'll see why. So here we go. Yes, the opener. Let's start off with a good old analysis of how they brought us back into their world. Did you think they really engaged us, really caught our attention, and yeah, went, oh yeah, I want to keep watching this movie?
Let's also set a little bit of precedent here. I have seen all five, well, four plus the spinoff, or the, well, we'll not talk about that one. They're like, I've seen all the Ghostbuster movies, more or less. So I'm very familiar with how these movies start and such. I wasn't sure. So I was actually, I did kind of like how they opened it up. Like, because the opening was like, they actually go back in time to the 1900s when the Ghostbuster fire building is actually a firehouse again, like when it was actually a and they show like some incident that takes place at this like adventurers club where the firemen get called and they break into a room and everyone is frozen. There's ice everywhere and everything is like solid ice and and it's not clear why, what happened. Except there's like this guy in armor holding a metal ball. That's all we can tell.
True. I thought that part was fine. It was interesting to me more so because this moved. Now, granted, I haven't seen all of the Ghostbusters, so I will say that. But this made me think a lot about how a fair amount of modern superhero movies start with a ominous bad villain doing something right off the bat to forebode their presence and give you a sense of, oh no, they're going to come. And then you have the good guys reappearing on the scene and reasserting their dominance in this world by taking on the danger in front of them and all that kind of stuff. And so there was, it was fine. I mean, I hate that it's become stereotypical, but I don't hate the opener. And it's not like there was nothing that they did enough about it to make it unique is what stuck in my mind. So it wasn't like, oh, this is a bad way to do things. It's just very stereotypical. And there's, they didn't add that extra touch that makes it feel more unique. And when I was thinking about this, I was thinking about, for example, One Life, which we just reviewed. And that one has a pretty somewhat stereotypical opener, but it's not, if you've seen like biographies or a very tame movie in comparison, but that's not a regular occurrence necessarily. Or maybe, no, the way I'm going with this actually is that they had enough unique things about the character himself and what was about him that it didn't feel like a stock opener. And so I was saying, like, if they had just added a few small techniques, it probably could have made it better. But, you know, it was fine. It was fine.
You know? Yeah, no, I didn't even think about that for the beginning. I probably should have. When I was watching it, I didn't notice that because I was just thinking in terms of Ghostbusters. I wasn't even thinking in terms of superhero stuff. I could see that now that you've made that comparison. I still kind of like the opening just because it is different for Ghostbusters, but... I could see the comparison.
Yeah, and it's not like it opens like other Ghostbusters necessarily do. So that is fair. I saw it more as a cultural opener than necessarily a Ghostbusters opener because it's definitely different from the other Ghostbusters. But anyways, nothing to sneeze about. The main character. Who was the main character?
I mean, I just put Phoebe down as the main character. I don't know if that was completely accurate, but I mean, in the prior movie Afterlife, she was definitely a central character, like the main character the story followed. So, and it kind of seemed to follow that trend. I mean, it does like follow her brother Finn. I mean, both movies kind of follow Finn around a little bit, so he's kind of a central character too, but I mean, it more follows Phoebe more than Finn. So and in relation to the story and plot of this movie, like, more things related to the central conflict happened with Phoebe as opposed to Finn on his own.
Yeah.
So in that regards, she's more of a main character in that regards.
No, I agree. I thought that some people might think of, say, Gary as a main character because they spent a significant amount of time on him. But honestly, Phoebe does get the most screen time, the most character development. So I'd probably agree with that. Did you think her character development was compelling, or what was your thought on her as a character in this story?
She was a better character in Afterlife from what I remember. In Afterlife, she was more of a kid. Like, she's like going to school kind of thing. In this one, she's still she's a teenager now. I guess they were going for the rebellious teenager kind of look for her, I guess. Her actions and motives, like, she's clearly not happy with what her family, her parents are telling her to do. Like, she's kind of being kicked off the Ghostbusters team temporarily until, like, she's older. And she doesn't like that. I mean, I guess there's some, you understand why she's upset. I mean, there's some understanding, but it's not, like, super developed, I guess. Uh-huh. Also, like, some of her actions in this movie didn't make a whole lot of sense. I feel like they needed to explain more of her actions and thought process. Because some of it just like, okay, why would you do that? In my mind, I was just like, I don't know. Like, it seems a little extreme, like some of her actions.
What are you thinking of specifically?
I mean, this goes a little bit further in the movie, but I'm thinking specifically when she decides to separate her spirit from her body, like become a ghost kind of thing. I kind of felt a little bit out of the blue for me. Like, okay, like you didn't really develop this, like why she wants to do that. Like maybe hint at it a little bit, but not, I don't know.
I don't really feel like going to bat for Phoebe, to be honest, because obviously I didn't give this a crazy good rating. But at the same time, to kind of play the devil's advocate in this case, I don't know that they spell out a lot in this movie. They spell out a lot in very explicit terms. Like they take a Chekhov's gun, right? Cock it and then kind of like dangle it in front of your face and go, this is what's about to happen. Okay, now let's do it. You know, with, for example, the fire guy and all that kind of stuff, literally just right in your face. So this was one of those things that wasn't that way. And I think with the way they set up everything else, you would almost expect it to be right in your face. I saw some of the things that hinted toward it, such as, I mean, obviously it developed with the lack of connection that Phoebe felt in her family and with these other things. And then she has a discussion with what's his face, who was the original Ghostbuster, about what it is like to be a ghost and things like that. So I thought that they set up enough that it was decent. I had a problem with her playing chess in the middle of
Ray Stantz. That's who she's talking to.
Yeah, Ray Stantz. I don't understand why a kid would be allowed outside to play in the park chess by herself in the middle of the night in New York City. That was a bigger problem in my mind. Like, what kind of idiot lets that happen? But, you know, whatever.
It's a very nice looking paranoid New York City.
Yeah. No problems at all. A young 15-year-old girl can just walk outside and have no concern. That sounds nice. Like, I hope that New York City is like that. Not really visited, so I can't say. Anyways, you know, I thought she was fine. I thought that her character, I wasn't like a huge fan of her character from a like personal standpoint, but like as a character development itself, I thought, you know, they do pretty decent at developing her. She definitely has the show don't tell in a lot of ways that I appreciated. And yeah, she is the stereotypical angsty teenager, right? But at the same time, they have a couple of unique things about her, right? She's a super genius. She's the descendant of Egon Spengler. She's, you know, has a unique opportunity that was part of her life that she felt very connected to that was stolen from her. And that was being one of the Ghostbusters. And so I thought that there was enough there that I was like, you know, pretty good. Not full points, but pretty close. You know, it was one of the few parts where I thought they did decent.
Okay.
But I see what you're saying a little bit. I disagree, but I see what you're saying.
Okay.
Anyway, side characters. I don't want to dwell too much on that. What did you think? Did they have their own motivations? Were they compelling motivations?
So some of them have their own motivations to varying degrees of development. What's it like? I'm trying to look through the names of characters because there's actually like a lot of characters running around in this movie. I mean, I guess Paul Rudd's Gary, like he has a fairly developed motivation. Like he's trying to be like a part of the family and trying to like kind of be the father figure that he like, because he's kind of like the stepdad, like the new person in the family, and he's like, okay, like what should I do here?
Yeah,
this is hard to say. Some characters have their own motivation per se, as it's like, because this is a comedy. So it's like some of these side plots are like, it's not so much dealing with what they want. It's like they're just dealing with situations as they come up. Like with Finn's case, he's dealing with the Slimer in the attic for part of the movie. And it's like, I don't know. Like, it's hard to say what does he, like, the motive. He's just trying to catch Slimer, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously motivated in his own way, just wanting to be, I'm an adult. And he was very stock in that. But like, he had his own motivations. I didn't think he was that great of a character. He definitely wasn't a point adder for sure in my mind, just because you think of the tacked on older brother stock character. That's what he was. You know, but what you were saying there, that's interesting. The idea that they were all just responding to situations rather than trying to engage and move forward with situations, because
I'm trying to think right now, like, which characters, like, Phoebe is like,
she's the main character, but she is one of the few that maybe doesn't just respond in that she actually is trying to figure things out, and she's engaging with this ghost and doing things like that.
I guess Ray Stans would also count as someone who's interacting, like operating on his own agenda. The original Ghostbusters, he has the shop because he's like investigating this orb and he's like asking questions.
That's true.
Ernie, when he shows up, I don't like, he's clearly motivated. Like, he's trying to keep the Ghostbusters alive. So I guess he would, even though he doesn't have like a huge like part in the first part of the movie.
No. And some of these characters, they get such small scenes that I don't even really, they're just appearances. They're not really characters. And that's why, what's his name? The guy who plays in Groundhog Day.
Oh, Bill Murray. Bill Peter Venkman. He plays Peter Venkman, yes.
Mm-hmm. When Peter, he has like two scenes.
And he's in one scene.
Yeah. It's like his total existence was so small that it was a cameo appearance and that was his only purpose. Mm-hmm. And as a side note, I thought that was, it was stupid.
I liked the scenes he was in.
I thought they were funny. I thought they were funny, but they were purely for the audience to harken back to nostalgia, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't think that that's necessarily the most effective way to draw audience in, is to purely do nostalgia. I mean, it'll work for the audience today, but unless you're really a fan of it, it's not going to stick around versus other things that that stand on their own and are legitimately good. And I think they were trying to do like a Spider-Man No Way Home type situation where, you know, you have these great characters come in a comedy in this case, and have this whole band back together kind of situation. But I don't think it worked as well.
So, I mean, this is slight spoilers for you, because I know you haven't seen Afterlife, but they do show up in Afterlife as well. Now, their role is actually smaller in Afterlife than it is in this movie.
Lol.
That's saying something. but, like, Afterlife focuses more specifically on the Spangler family when they're in Oklahoma. In this movie, it's, like, clearly Ray Stans and Ernie, that's not his character's name. His name is Winston, I'm sorry. Like, Ray Stans and Winston, like, they're more a part of the plot this time around. Like, Winston is funding the Ghostbusters, like, trying to keep it alive and, like, keep them out of trouble with the police and the mayor, who's also a returning character.
Right.
And then you have Ray, who's, like, still into the whole poltergeist, like, ghostly stuff, and he's, like, investigating things and trying to get answers regarding this ancient, essentially it's an ancient Ghostbusters team called the Firestarters or something.
Yeah, I mean, I don't feel like their side interactions from the previous movie had any impact on whether or not, like, you enjoyed this movie any more or less. Mm-hmm. I mean, I did appreciate that. I felt like this movie was cohesive enough on its own that you didn't have to do the MCU, watch 20 million movies just to know what was going on in this one. It wasn't that type of situation.
Yeah, you definitely didn't need to know, have seen... Well, okay, there's one reference to Ghostbusters 2 in a TV broadcast, like a news reporter. Yeah. And then there's, like, a few conversations towards the beginning that are a reference to Afterlife, clearly. And clearly, Gary is the stepdad. Like, he wasn't a part of the family initially, and that's because of Afterlife he was kind of brought into their lives. But other than that, you're right. This movie could kind of stand on its own. Aside from it being a sequel to the original Ghostbusters, because I feel like you'd have to have seen the original Ghostbusters to at least understand the majority of the stuff that happens in this movie.
Or at least acknowledge a lot of what's going on. That's true. Like, you wouldn't understand the mini marshmallow guys or understand why anyone from this old team are getting back together or why we even care, because you never saw the first one. So that's true. It doesn't completely stand on its own after you say that. Yeah, but there was a decent amount, going back to what we were originally discussing, a decent amount of characters that had some development, maybe are making a good point that they were just reactive and not really having their own motives. So that I think that that would affect my rating. I hadn't really thought about that very clearly, which probably is why I didn't find most characters as compelling as Phoebe's character and Stant's character. So, you know, that's a good point. What did you think about the setting? Did you think the setting itself was believable?
I gave it middle of the road kind of points for the setting. And that's because, I mean, some of the rules make sense. Like, they've established the rules in the first Ghostbusters movie. And some of those rules, like, they follow through and they kind of make sense.
Yeah.
There is one thing they said in the movie that didn't make sense. Because if you remember the first Ghostbusters movie, they kind of got the firehouse, like, randomly kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they almost make it sound like they intentionally chose the firehouse. At one point in the movie, it's like, wait, that's not what happened in the original Ghostbusters.
Okay. I saw that as more coincidence, but...
I don't know, like, that stood out in my mind.
So. Was it trying to say, and I'm not recalling exactly what you're talking about, so I'm just playing the devil's advocate here, but Winston, is it not something that maybe Winston figured out after the fact and then was like, oh, it's really important to keep this as the Ghostbusters headquarters?
He might have found out after the fact. I'll allow that. I don't know. Like, it was one of those, I think one of those in the moment things that, like, stood out to me because it's like, wait, hang on. Like, when I was watching it, I didn't really think about it too much, but it was like,
yeah.
It did stand out. The only other thing about the movie, there is a few questions I had about the authority in this movie, like the police and the mayor. Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like if they're the mayor and the police, like, they would have more authority in this movie than they actually had. It felt like they were told things, the Ghostbusters, and they just flagrantly disregard those rules and, like, orders, and they get away with it or something. And I was just like, I don't know. Like, it was just a few scenes that didn't connect. And it was just like,
true.
From a setting perspective, I was like, okay, these are the authority figures. Either the authority is really lousy in this movie, or this doesn't make any sense.
And yet, New York City is so safe that people could just walk around at night with no concern in the middle of the park.
I guess so.
And you could be 15-year-old. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyways.
The only other thing I'll say about the setting is they try to develop things in this movie. Like, clearly they're branching out the Ghostbusters, like, mythos, I guess.
Okay.
And I did have a few weird questions. I mean, I don't know. Like, I guess they were trying to figure out how to, if there was ancient Ghostbusters in ancient Egypt or Mesopotamia, whatever, like, how would they capture ghosts? And it was, like, through fire, and, like, when they're introducing the fire starters, which I guess, and this is that's the part of this movie that makes me think more of the MCU or superhero movies, like, because this is clearly a new thing that wasn't in any of the other Ghostbuster movies.
Right, yeah. I did think it was an interesting ad for, and I will say that Nadim, the character who is the fire starter dude, was hilarious. And yes, as an addition to the movie, was my favorite part of the movie. Not gonna lie.
I agree. Yeah. Every scene with him in it was a great scene.
Yeah. Very funny. I was not expecting, I thought it was Taika Waititi at first who was playing him, but I was wrong. It was a different guy. I just appreciate Taika whenever he shows up on the screen. But it was Kumail Nanjiani. So good job you for doing that, because you made me laugh a lot, and it was good. It was one of those parts where I was, you know, you get your money's worth just off of him. So he had his own motives, I will say. That guy he was fully developed as the quintessential bum who wants to aspire to something but just can't, and then has destiny thrust upon him.
It's like he makes excuses for his actions, and then it's like suddenly destiny is thrown upon him and he doesn't know what to do with it.
Yes. It's pretty good. Enough on that. The compelling motives. Did you think there was any of those for the protagonist?
Like, as far as motive, like, they clearly want to be Ghostbusters. Some of these people are like, oh, I want to hunt ghosts. I want to continue this legacy kind of thing. So, I mean, in that regard, it's like, they do want this. So, I mean, it's not like they're acting on what they want. I mean, as far as compelling motive, I don't know if there's a motive per se, except to get ghosts. Like, there's no, like, moral like reason, oh, we must get ghosts or something. I don't know.
Right, right. And some of that goes true. And maybe Phoebe's a little bit different from the rest of the characters in the story. But did you think that her conflicts, was there a reason for her to be involved in the plot specifically?
Well, in regards, she wants to be a Ghostbuster. So clearly, like, she doesn't like that she's been kicked off the team temporarily, even though it is temporarily, she just doesn't like it. So she runs into this ghost girl, who I can't remember her character name, but...
Melody.
Melody, yeah. Like, when she runs into Melody, it's almost like, okay, she clearly knows what a... Like, she's not fazed by the appearance of a ghost. She's like, I've seen ghosts before. But then they have these interactions, and it's like, okay, I guess there's some motive there. She's like trying to understand like Melody, I guess. Like, also they kind of have a friendship kind of going.
Yeah. And I think that that's more of where her story is. It is a good point to say, well, that story only is for a lot of the plot. It's tangentially related to some of the other things. They weave it together. Okay. With the, she's almost like the response that Phoebe goes to after she's not allowed on the team. So there is that, but I don't think it's uncompelling. I thought that her motive was pretty compelling, but I guess it's not really tied to the bad guy until
it's not
three quarters of the way through the movie.
I'd say two-thirds, but...
Yeah, okay, whatever. I mean, the point is, you go through a decent portion of the movie, and this bad guy who's ominous, who's building up, right, isn't really have anything to do with our main character until our main character lets him out. Mm-hmm. So, it's like... I guess that's true. I don't think her reason for being involved in a lot of these things is bad. It's just that...
It no, was I wasn't either.
It was a little late in regards to the bad guy who they weren't building up to this entire time.
I guess for me, I kind of wanted to see more development, like more like backstory, like motive, like more like interactions maybe between Melody and Phoebe, I guess. I guess I just want to see more things play out more, I guess, and like understand their lines of thinking more as they're talking.
Yeah, and true.
Because maybe it felt a little rushed to me. Maybe that was the thing. Like, it felt like they were just jumping through these hoops as fast as they could to get them to this point. So, and there's several things in the movie that are kind of like that, where like, they're, like they're just pushing the plot along.
That's how I felt about a couple points for sure later down in this. But if you're just, when you feel like the story is serving the plot rather than the plot serving the story, it doesn't translate well, and so that's what we had here. Good point. The villain, did you think that the villain was compelling?
I felt like he was, as far as a force to be reckoned with, he was definitely a force to be reckoned with. Clearly he had power, and like, especially once he's been released, he's like, they have a hard time stopping him. Like, only a few people seem to have the ability to like put a stop to him and like in his track, like keep him from moving forward. And that's mostly Nadim and Phoebe once she's upgraded her proton pack with the brass and like the metals that can have like that were from the fire, like specifically affects him, that one ghost.
Yeah.
Aside from that, like I don't know if they're like compelling. Like, I don't know. Like, he was kind of like their stereotypical bad guy, more or less. You're aloof, like faraway villain who you only kind of see as monstrous. You don't really see a whole lot of development behind him, even though he was intelligent.
When you have a villain like that, you have to have a lot of mystery and uncertainty around them, right? In this case, they spell out pretty clearly what he wants to do, which is to cover the Earth in a second ice age or whatever they spouted out in the middle of the movie, right? That he's just here to kill everybody, and that's his purpose. And he's, you know, just a big bad guy. So that's pretty much what you get. Yeah, he was a stereotypical villain from ancient times past. And I'm not going to say he's the worst villain I've ever seen, but he was pretty... Yeah. And I think the point is that when you have all this unknown about him, you create uncertainty about what the future holds because you don't even know what he's going to do. I think they clearly spelled out what his powers are, who where he comes from, and what he's here to do. And there was little uncertainty in my mind. You literally see this guy at the beginning. You go, okay, so he's going to get close to icing everyone over. Then they're going to fight him. And then through this flame guy in some way, probably through what's her face, Phoebe, and, you know, maybe, I don't know, something else. I did kind of predict Melody coming in to save at the end as well. You predict that these elements are going to be there in some form or another, and you are pretty certain that they're going to defeat him. And I think that was the bigger thing with the villain, is he was so stereotypical that it didn't lend to heightened tension later on.
I wasn't saying he was a bad villain, because I agree he had a whole lot of mystery around him. Like, there was definitely that whole, like, okay, you didn't know what he was going to do. He was kind of this mystical force from ancient times, and he clearly, like, we knew what he could do, and we had some inkling of motive, but not so a lot, and we didn't completely know what he was going to do once he had achieved, like, destroying the ghost, but, like, solidifying control over everything.
Yeah.
So, in that regard, I don't think he was a bad villain. I just think he wasn't a great villain either.
And you don't have the same type of mystery that you get with, say, a Ringwraith or some sort of horror monster that you don't know the origins of until the end, right? So I do think that there was some problems there. What about themes? Did you think that there was a compelling theme that was portrayed or developed in the story through any of the characters or anything you saw in the movie?
I mean, in a way, there is. I mean, this is almost a stereotypical answer, but I would add a slight twist to it. And because kind of the central idea of family is brought back again from this movie, but I would say it's also about unity, like within a family, I guess. Because, like, there's almost this idea of, like, a family sticking together, like, not dividing kind of thing. So it's almost like the cohesion of the family unit, like sticking together through thick and thin and working together towards a goal. Because that's definitely keeps coming back up in the movie.
I agree somewhat. I didn't give it a ton of points here because it was it was that, but it was pretty stock. There wasn't really
a lot. No, it was stock. No, it was. I'm not saying it was good. It was just like, it was stock.
It was there. It was there.
I was just acknowledging it was there.
That's fair.
They deserve points for trying, but that's it.
And no A for effort here, but you get participation trophy, so there's something. Did you want to keep talking about heightened tension? I did mention it briefly. If you want to discuss
there's not really like a whole lot of tension in the movie. It's kind of stereotypical, kind of guess where things are going. And also, this movie kind of follows in the vein of the first Ghostbusters, where it's more of a comedy. So, like, there's definitely not a whole lot of tension because of that. Like, there's a lot of, like, lighthearted moments because of making jokes about certain things. And some of those jokes are legitimately funny. Like, they're really good. But it also doesn't make the story very strong in some places because it's, it's more about the comedy and less about the tension and the threat that could come across Manhattan and the rest of the world. So,
yeah. And that's the struggle, right? When you're having, because if you add humor to a story, it can actually add to that emotional roller coaster you go through where it decreases tension and then re-increase tension and decrease. Mm-hmm. But if it's so focused on comedy, then you don't actually get the chance to raise the tension. And in this case, they definitely didn't. It matters where the tension, like where the humor comes from, in that if the humor is coming from a central point that's a plot point in the story, you can't take that point seriously because it's funny. And so then you destroy any conflict payoff that you could possibly get from that part of the story. And that's what they definitely did with a lot of elements of this movie.
The only scene I visibly remember having some level of tension from was the scene where Phoebe decides she's going to be a ghost temporarily.
Right.
Where it's like she gets into the machine that separates the ghostly stuff from the physical. So she puts herself inside the machine, gets her spirit pulled out of it so she can interact with Melody, I guess, on the spiritual plane. Mm-hmm. And that opens the door for the villain to control her, like more or less like take control of her ghost and that through that her body, and then get her to utter the chant that frees him from the ancient Ghostbuster trap, whatever, the Firestarter. I keep calling Firestarter, but I'm not sure if that's what they're called.
The Firebenders, of, you know.
Firebenders, that works just as well.
Avatar. Yeah. Anyways, yes. Yeah, I will say that scene was one of the reasons it didn't get no points. Mm-hmm. That scene I actually found kind of disturbing.
No, it was a disturbing scene. Like, of all the scenes they've done in Ghostbusters so far, I felt like that was one of the most disturbing scenes they've shown in Ghostbusters so far.
Yeah. I was surprised that was actually in the movie, mm-hmm. considering, but at the same time, not, because they've also had like possession scenes and things like that, such as in the first one. That was a joke though, but it was in the first one.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, like, yeah, it wasn't unprecedented, this scene, like, considering everything involving ghosts, possession and other things, like, it wasn't like, oh, so surprising, like, this has never happened before, like, we've seen this before in other ways, but as you said, it was a joke before. Like, in the first Ghostbusters, it was a hilarious scene. This is not a joke. Like, when this happens, it's the villain taking control of someone to affect his own ends, more or less.
Yeah.
And it's a very... So it is a disturbing scene because of that. And rightly so.
Yeah. Yeah, a little uncomfortable, but, you know, that's... What can I say? So they got some points from me in that regard, but not a ton. The world-shattering loss. Did Phoebe experience world-shattering loss from this movie? Did you experience a world-shattering loss from this movie?
The only scene I could say, that same scene we just talked about, might have qualified for some loss, and that's only because, like, she was legitimately tricked by Melody, so it's because of her foolishness or her actions that the villain escapes, and she understands it was her fault that this happened. So, like, she kind of blames herself. So she blames herself afterwards, like, I did this. Like, I caused this to happen. So, like, in a way, that is her world-shattering loss, though really it's brief. Yeah. And it's only for... and it's mostly there just to acknowledge that she did it, I guess. And gives her the reason of... I guess it's a scene where the family comes together and comforts her. So, I guess the whole idea, like, engaging with the theme of family, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you see that especially when Gary goes to interact with her and whatnot, you know, trying to be the good father figure in her life. Yeah, it's definitely a low point for her. It wasn't amazing, but, you know, it was there and they definitely tried. So participation points again and, you know, that kind of stuff. Is there a big revelation in this movie?
Maybe Nadim as a fire starter. I don't know. I mean, and the ghost girl working, like Melody working with the villain, like that was kind of shown to the audience at one point. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't a super surprise there.
Yeah.
I'm hard pressed to say there was a huge revelation anywhere in this movie. And that's not really a surprise ending either. It's just like, okay, this is, this all kind of fits in. It's all like a big puzzle where it's like they put things together, create this line, and it's like, oh, it all fits together perfectly. It looks great, but it's not really surprising because it's
all the tricks in the book were tricks we saw because they made them very, very obvious in the movie, which is, you know, it's a hard struggle. So I'm not going to say that revelation, having surprising twists in movies is very hard. I'm not going to say everyone should do that. I always say that, right? That's the most difficult part. You can still have a good story and not have surprise revelations. That being said, there should still be uncertainty in the story, which is, going back to what I said earlier, different. But the revelations itself are difficult to do well. So they didn't. The only thing that they really caught me by surprise with was the fact that they could trap the old ghost in the old container. Oh. And at that point, it wasn't so much a surprise, like a surprising ending, as much as I went, one, does that even fit the rules of this universe? Can they do that? And then second, because they have to use specific metals to do all these other things.
No, I mean, I guess.
And then second, it's just like at that point they had done one of those Iron Man 3 endings where it's like, oh, he's defeated. Oh, he's not quite defeated. Oh, no, he's winning. Oh, he's defeated. Oh, he's not quite defeated. Oh, he's winning. Oh, no. Oh, he's done, dude. He's done.
I'll be honest. I hate it when movies take a story and like give it multiple climaxes, like multiple endings. Well, it feels like, mm-hmm. oh, the story's almost over. Like it's ending. Oh, no, it's not. Oh, it's over. Oh, no, it's not. Like they just keep doing that back and forth. Yeah. It's almost like they're trying to create, like, trick the audience. Like, oh, somehow it's cool or something. No, it's not. It's like you're psyching the audience out. And it's like, I don't like it because it's like, it's not, doesn't have a payoff. Like, there's no point. It's just like, you're just having.
Exactly.
It's like, it's pointless and it's just irritating the audience, really.
Yeah.
So, well, and it irritates me a lot because I notice it.
Well, yeah, it's just like, okay, going off what you said, it's supposed to, there's no payoff. That's exactly right. If you have, because you had three different things that all in their own right, theoretically, should be a convincing conclusion to this, right? Whether it's the fire dude to defeat him.
Mm-hmm.
Should be convincing in its own right to defeat him. But then when he doesn't, it's like, okay, well now, what was the point of that? Or if you have Phoebe melting down the special metal to put into her machine that she can coat her stuff with so that she can actually hurt the villain, you know, oh, that didn't work either. What was the point of going down that and saying she's a super genius when she can't even solve it? Or the thing with Melody where you're like, oh, she betrayed her master so that she could save the good guys and turn to the right side and do the right thing. Oh, that didn't even solve it either. Okay, like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, the only thing I will say, now that I'm thinking about it, is like each of those three endings more or less gave some kind of arc to different characters in the movie. Like the first one with like Nadim is now the fire starter. Like he can control fire and affect the villain now. The second one, like it gives Phoebe's family a chance to like bond around her as like they're trying to wrestle the demon god down. And then you have the old Ghostbusters team, like trying to figure out a way to contain it, like create a trap that can actually contain the thing. So like they turn the old storage unit, like they reverse the process, hoping it'll turn it to a giant ghost trap and suck it in. So it's like, it kind of, I guess the way each climax kind of gives points to a different set of characters and gives them like a arc sort of.
I agree. And I think,
I mean, cause I will say this, I noticed the multiple climaxes, but it didn't upset me as much this time around as it did in other movies I've seen. I have a few notable movies that I hate still because of them, this thing. But this movie didn't upset me as much. I didn't know why. It did bug me because I don't like it when it happened, but it didn't upset me as much as it normally did. And I was thinking about it just now, and I think maybe that's why, because each ending kind of was trying to bring closure to a certain set of characters in the movie.
Right.
But it is stilted. I will say that is a stilted way of bringing closure to each set of characters.
Yeah. And it feels like, once again, that it's the story is serving the plot rather than the plot serving the story.
Yes.
Right. And so that it's another one of those instances where it says, oh, we checked off that box, rather than making it a part of a more compelling narrative that they're trying to demonstrate on the screen. To play maybe the devil's advocate for you as well, there's a sense in which you could say that all of these things together point back to the theme that you were talking about earlier of unity, of, oh, they all work together to solve this resolution. And so maybe that's why it didn't bother you as much. It still bothered the crap out of me. So I don't know where you're getting. No, I'm just kidding. but it's, I think you could make the argument for that, which is fine. It still, I think, cheapens all of the other efforts that they put in the story.
No, this movie, as far as the story itself, it was more like a checklist where like they had a formula, like, oh, we need to hit all these marks. And like, they're just checking off each point and like trying to, at the same time, also make a movie that included all the Ghostbusters this time around, like include the old team, the new team, as well as introducing this new guy, Nadim. So it was like they are just trying to hit all the marks while bringing all these characters together for this story and conflict. So there wasn't a whole lot of effort, it felt like, put into the story itself. But as I said, like, this movie really wasn't so much a story as a comedy. Like, they were more focused on the jokes and the humor of this movie, which is probably more in line with the original Ghostbusters. And as I said, the story in this movie is better, in my opinion, than the first one.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. Yes.
But I did, and even though, like, this movie only got 3.8 from me, like, yeah, 3.85 from me, I still like this movie, kind of. I did enjoy my time, like, in the movie theater. So, but that's because it's a comedy, and I like comedies, so.
Fair point. Does the hero change as a person?
She does, a little bit, at least a little bit. I'm not sure how much you would qualify as her, much of a change you'd say she got, but, like, at the end, she kind of, like, she grows closer to her family through this, and she also, like, because she's also calling Gary by his first name, I think, for most of the movie. Like, she doesn't call him Dad until the very end of the movie. So, I guess they're kind of showing that she's changing a little bit, but I don't know. Like, it was hard. I don't know if it was believable in my book. I feel like, from my perspective, it didn't feel completely believable. But she does, there's a little bit of change between her at the beginning of the movie and the end of the movie. A little bit.
I think I see what you're saying there, and I'd probably agree with that. Mm-hmm. I gave her some points on this because I did see that transformation, but I don't think, I do agree that it felt a little stilted. Doesn't really, X equals Y equals Z. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we didn't even talk about the EPA guy, and I just realized that EPA guy, I don't understand why he was a villain. Because he has
the mayor.
Yes, the mayor guy who was the EPA guy in the first one. Why he was against them when he has past precedent that this is stupid. And it just was clearly a vengeful man with no intelligence or purpose behind what he was doing other than pure I want to get back at you kind of mentality.
I mean, he didn't have a whole lot of scenes in the movie to begin with. Like, he only had like four appearances in the movie total, I think, three or four. And every time he's like, oh, I'm gonna get you, like, kind of thing. Like,
yeah.
And it's like he's just looking for a reason to take down the Ghostbusters finally, and maybe even put them in prison or something. And it's like his character was like, it was kind of pathetic. It was just like,
it was.
He's supposed to be the mayor, and it's like he gives these orders, like, lock up their gear, like, condemn their, like, firehouse. And like, if that was legit, they shouldn't have been able to, like, break in or whatever, like, get in these get their stuff back as easily as they did in this movie. I was like, okay, well, you just made the New York Police Department and Bayer's office look stupid and ineffective. So I don't know, like, if that was the intention, okay, but otherwise, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Anyways, I just wanted to note that. And you covered everything that I was thinking, so I have nothing else to say on that. Is there a message in this story?
I mean, we kind of already talked about it. So, I mean, I guess kind of. But it wasn't strong. It just was there.
I mean, there was a theme. I think, does the theme terminate into anything was what I was, when I think of this question, that's what I'm thinking of. And I think that while the theme is definitely there, I don't know what the message is, what I'm trying to take away. Something about unity and sticking together.
There's not really a conclusion. It's just like an idea that's floated around. There is some semblance to it. It makes sense.
Right.
Is it compelling? It really wasn't a huge, like, driving force in the, I don't know.
So, and I just thought of this, then this might, let me throw this at you. And this is going into the next question too. So I'll just combine it here, but let me just play out my thoughts for a second.
Okay.
When you think of a message, right? Well, when you have a theme in a story, the theme is the embodiment of some idea, hopefully some ideal, but not always, maybe at the very least an idea. And then you see that idea developed throughout the story until it comes to its conclusion. And in the embodiment of this idea, this person who is carrying it with them through the story learns and grows and struggles and has pain and suffering and all of this stuff. And they are faced with the same problem in different situations and have to grasp what it means, right? And then at the end, they come back to their old world, a changed person having gone through this and taking the same value, and now they have, it has so much more meaning in their old world. Right. I didn't really see, while I saw these themes, I didn't really see a different world from the beginning to the end.
No, it's not a different... No, like, what you start the movie with, the first scene with the Spangler family, is essentially how the movie ends with them. Like, it's the same, like, relatively same scene. Them chasing the Chinese ghost dragon that they start the movie chasing. They're chasing it again at the end of the movie. Mm-hmm. So, and it's not really, like, it's not different. It's the same thing. It's not like their lives improve better because of it. It's just back to business.
And that's the thing that that's sticking out in my mind is okay, so you have something like Lord of the Rings where it starts exactly how it ends in some ways, but in the same way, it's not the same. And you see that with the characters where they come back and they go, we just don't fit here in the same way that we did before. And there's some ways that we have grown and expanded beyond this in a way that this can't contain or understand all that we've been through. And when they just didn't have the same struggle in this kind of movie. Obviously, it's not the same because Lord of the Rings is crazy, you know, and so much bigger. So that's not exactly a fair comparison. But the idea of the arc, right? The arc where you come back and you are changed, but you come back to the same world, a different person. There was no semblance of that. And so how can you have a message to take from this theme that was developed through this story when the theme wasn't really developed that much, if at all, and looks exactly the same at the beginning as it does at the end?
Well, as you said, there was just a participation award for this kind of thing. They tried, but it really wasn't developed.
So did it leave you satisfied? Is that what you put? Participation? Or did you say, let's go back? Let's watch it again.
So, like, I wasn't sure how to respond to this one because, like, according to the story, I wasn't, like, the story itself wasn't satisfying in my book, but I was satisfied with the movie. Like, I was satisfied with the laughs and the, like, comedy along the way. So I was happy with the movie in that regard. Like, I got my money's worth out of the movie because of the jokes and humor. The story itself could have used a lot of work.
I mean, the story itself was fine. It ended fine, you know, and that's why it got 4-ish. Probably a little bit less after this discussion, to be honest, but 4-ish from me. It's not a terrible movie, but it's also not a great movie. Gotta suck in some ways.
Like, actually, I think my review bolstered just a tad, like, to 4, because it was 3.85, and I was like 4, probably now.
Why? You got so many things that trashed it.
I mean, because it's middle of the road. The movie wasn't awful, but it wasn't great. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
I think in my point values, I was probably a little bit more harsher on Phoebe than you were.
True.
So maybe that, and your arguments did change my mind a little bit. Like, well, maybe I'm being a little harsher on her character than I need to be.
I don't know. I mean, I will say that there were some things that I maybe gave her more points for than I should. Like motive, you made some good points on. So overall, I don't know. I might even give it a 3.5 if I'm feeling a little frisky, you know. So here we are. and that's it. That's the pod. That's all we got. Should we even be doing any more Ghostbusters? I don't know. It always turns out the same. So leave us a note in the comments or in the review. You can leave on the podcast app. That's right. Or leave a comment in the YouTube channel. What we do care about is seeing you next week. So come on back. We'll be here. See you then.